Welcome to Energy Law Roundup, your comprehensive weekly briefing on legal news and developments in the energy industry from Texas and across the country, always in 30 minutes or less. And now, your host for Energy Law Roundup, business litigator and oil and gas trial lawyer, Tom Charlone.
It is the week of June 12th, 2017. Again, my name is Tom Charlone. I'm a litigation partner at Kane, Russell, Coleman & Logan, resident in our firm's Houston, Texas office. For this week's podcast, we are excited to have a guest speaker, Chip Morris, and a guest host, Andrea Johnson. Andrea, or AJ as we call her, focuses her practice in employment law. She's been a Texas super lawyer in employment law for 9 years in a row, has practiced law for over 30 years, and works as a director in the Houston office of Kane Russell. For clients that range from international to the local, AJ provides day-to-day advice and has tried numerous cases and class actions in both federal and state court, as well as in arbitration. She is a much sought-after speaker and writer, and we are happy to have her today to help us host the podcast. Welcome, AJ.
Thanks, Tom. During today's podcast, we'll be talking about the recent appellate decision, Eurocat U.S. Inc. versus Markland, which comes from the 14th Court of Appeals here in Houston. This case provides some teaching points for companies who want to rely on non-solicitation provisions in order to prevent former employees from poaching their employees and probably, more importantly, poaching their customers. To talk with us about this subject today is Bruce Chip Morris, a senior director in the Houston office of Kane, Russell, Coleman, and Logan. Chip is the head of the firm's intellectual property practice group and the former chairman of the American Bar Association's subcommittee on trade secrets and tortious interference with contractual relations. He has extensive experience in litigating trade secret and covenant not to compete cases. He's been involved in over 60 trials, and beyond that, he's authored successful briefs in two of the most significant appellate decisions here in Texas. Chip has also been quoted nationally by CNN.com and Wired Magazine as an expert on trade secret cases of national interest, and he speaks often in the area of trade secrets and non-compete law. Welcome, Chip, to the podcast, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into the details of the Eurocat decision, why don't you tell the audience a bit more specifically about how non-solicitation provisions work?
Well, non-solicitation provisions are typically placed in employment agreements, and there's two main types. The first one attempts to prevent former employees from soliciting their employer's customers, and the other one attempts to prevent employees from soliciting other employees to leave and go with them. A non-solicitation of customer provision will say something to the effect that for a period of time after the employee quits his employment with the company, the employee agrees not to solicit or attempt to solicit any of the company's customers.
All right, so it sounds like the key word everybody's focusing on is the word solicit. With that background as to non-solicits, let's talk about what happened in Eurocat.
Well, this case involved two former employees, Soren Markland and Douglas Wynn, leaving Eurocat to start a competing business. And after a lengthy jury trial, the jury found primarily for the employees.
What exactly did the jury find?
Among other things, the jury found that the former employees did not breach their fiduciary duties to the company, even though they were planning to compete against it while still in Eurocat's employ.
But Chip, these employees were not just low-level employees, were they?
No. In fact, Markland was the president of Eurocat, and Mr. Wynn was a plant manager. And both of them were considered the top two employees in the U.S. for Eurocat.
Wow. Did the company have these employees, these high-level employees, sign non-compete agreements?
No. In fact, that was part of the problem.
If they didn't have non-compete agreements in existence, how was the company able to sue them?
Well, every employee, regardless of whether they have an employment agreement or not, has certain fiduciary duties that are owed to a company, and that include the duty of loyalty. And in this case, the key issue was whether Mr. Markland or Mr. Wynn had violated their fiduciary duties to Eurocat.
What exactly were these two accused of doing?
Well, in the summer of 2010, Mr. Markland and Mr. Wynn met in the Eurocat parking lot. And at the time, Mr. Wynn was Mr. Markland's best friend at EuroCat. And Markland was concerned about his future at EuroCat and told Wynn that he needed to start looking for something else to do. In response, Wynn asked Markland to consider starting a company with him to compete against EuroCat.
So they were talking about forming a competing company in that parking lot discussion. What else were they accused of doing?
Well, while still employed at EuroCat, Markland approached two EuroCat customers. The first one, he asked about the potential of starting a company and what would they do? Would they do business with them? And then he actually went as far as asking one of EuroCat's customers to provide a letter of intent to do business with them in the event they started their new company.
Why did he need a letter of intent?
Well, he wanted to use that letter of intent to actually obtain financing to compete against EuroCat.
And what was Markland's response when this testimony was brought out?
Well, Markland testified that he had not yet formed the new company. So in his opinion, he had not solicited because he wasn't sure whether he's even going to go forward or not.
Okay, so then what happened?
Later on, Markland and Wynn quit and started a competing company.
And in response, I think we know what happened, but tell us what happened. What did EuroCat do?
Well, EuroCat sued them for numerous causes of action, including breach of fiduciary duty and trade secret misappropriation.
And what happened at trial and on appeal?
As I stated before, EuroCat lost its fiduciary duty claims. And so EuroCat then appealed to the 14th Court of Appeals.
Which is the case we're talking about today. What were some of the key issues in this appeal?
A principal issue was whether Wynn improperly solicited Markland by requesting him to join him in a competing business while they were still employed by EuroCat. Another big issue was whether Markland breached his common law of fiduciary duty by soliciting business while he was still employed.
What did the appellate court decide?
Well, first it found that when Wynn asked Markland to join him in forming a competing business, that the ask, so to speak, was not a solicitation.
What did the court say was the appropriate definition of solicitation if it's not, quote, an ask?
Since the definition in this case of solicit was not included in the jury charge, the Court of Appeals looked at some common definitions of solicitation or solicited and held that the commonly understood meaning of solicit includes more than to merely ask. In this particular instance, it stated that the definition was consistent with the approved common law contour of at-will employee actions to start a business with fellow employees.
So the court held that solicit meant something other than just to ask. What did it conclude about Markland's actions with regard to EuroCat's customers?
It found that the evidence before it had not conclusively established that Markland had breached his fiduciary duty by contacting the customers. And so it affirmed the jury findings.
Now, what does this opinion tell you about what's important for an employer in dealing with these issues about solicitation and non-solicitation by employees?
This opinion emphasizes the importance of having well-drafted employment agreements in place before an employee leaves a company's employment.
Why, in your view, is the written language in an agreement so critical?
Well, it now appears without a written employment agreement in place that includes provisions that prohibit such conduct that a fellow employee can get with another employee and start a business or even contact customers without it being considered a solicitation and a breach of their fiduciary duties.
All right. So, Chip, this is what the EuroCat court was struggling with and decided. Outside of this decision, what typically is the argument or question that comes up in these cases of non-solicitation issues?
Well, before the decision, when I would go to court to try to stop an employee from soliciting customers or employees, the focus typically was on whether the former employee reached out to the customer or the employee first, or was it vice versa. This typically could be proven by the company either through computer records or phone records.
So it's kind of a he said, she said situation.
Absolutely. And that was the focus of most of the arguments and the evidence in those type of situations.
Okay. So now we have EuroCat. Does it provide a wrinkle in this whole context of non-solicitation?
I think it does. I expect going forward that every time a company tries to enforce a non-solicitation provision, the other side now is going to argue, I didn't solicit any customers. I just asked for their business. And under EuroCat, arguably the definition of solicit that's being used, that would be okay.
So we started out this discussion talking about the key part in a provision, non-solicitation provision, would be the word solicit. And EuroCat maybe redefines what we believe to be the definition of solicit. So that might be a real problem if your non-compete provision or your non-solicitation provision only uses that word.
It could be a problem for those that do not review or try to update their agreements to take the EuroCAD decision into account. You don't want to wait until after the employee leaves to go look for your agreements.
Well, when do you think, I mean, given where we're at today, social media and everything, when does this really become an issue?
This is especially so in the age of social media. For example, is a former employee who sends out an announcement to his Facebook friends, is that a solicitation? Maybe, maybe not. Reality is the client doesn't want to pay me to litigate whether a posting is a solicitation. He wants the bleeding to stop. He wants to prevent the former employee from taking his customers. It's that simple.
So that's your end goal. Prevent them from taking customers, prevent them from taking other employees, right?
Correct.
So given where we're at in the oil patch these days, what's the impact of EuroCAD, do you think, in the business side dealing with employees and customers?
Well, everybody knows this is a very competitive field. And now more so than ever, it's important for companies to protect their customers and protect their employees. So I would do a few things. First of all, I would immediately look at my agreements and make sure that they're signed. Can't tell you how many times we have an employee leave. I ask for the agreements, I look at them, and they're not signed. So number one, make sure you have signed employment agreements. Two.
Maybe number one, make sure you have an agreement.
That's probably true. 1A is to make sure that they are signed. The second thing to do is look at the agreements and make sure that they have both a non-disclosure provision as well as a non-compete provision. My experience dealing with non-disclosure agreements standing alone is that they typically do not provide the protection that the company wants. It's always said that language and agreements don't matter until they're trying to be enforced. On more than one occasion, I've gone down and got a non-disclosure agreement enforced. However, the injunction that was obtained was not as far as the client had wanted. And typically when that happens, as soon as that case is over, the next thing the client wants me to do is add a non-compete provision to their employment agreements. So I would strongly suggest to include both to make sure that both are in those agreements.
In the agreements that you draft, what kind of language do you use to prevent solicitation of customers?
Well, when I'm looking at the language to include in the agreement, I'm trying to look at how it ends up before a court. I really don't want to get into an argument of who spoke to whom first. As you said earlier, that's a he said, she said. That litigation fight can be needlessly expensive and can be hard to prove. I also want now with EuroCAD to get away from the question of whether the employee merely asked for the business or merely asked the employee to leave. Under EuroCAD, that may be a fight we lose. So instead, what I try to do and what I've been doing for a while now is inserting broad language in non-compete provisions, non-solicitation provisions that, at least as it deals with the client's customers, is to prevent the employee from accepting business.
Well, what are the advantages of having a provision like that that says you cannot, as an employee, accept business in the future after you leave employment?
First of all, while it allows the employee to go to work for a competitor, it protects the client from what it's trying to be protected from.
And what's it trying to achieve?
What most companies are trying to achieve is to prevent the employee who had access to its customers, who was able to wine and dine the customers, who was able to develop the relationship with the customer, from leaving and taking those customers out the door with them.
That seems really important.
Also, by having a no accept business from provision, it's easy to prove. It basically, all you have to do is ask them, which customers have you called on? And they're either on the list or they're not. And as I said before, it takes away the he said, she said, as well as did I just merely ask? But most importantly, I've been able to successfully obtain injunctions that prevent former employers from accepting business from or hiring my clients' employees.
What do you do as far as non-solicitation of employees? Is it any different?
It is. What I do with non-solicitation of employee provisions that I think is a little bit different than maybe others is that I do include the typical non-solicitation language, but I also add language wherein the employee agrees not to actually hire or encourage any company employees to leave. Again, I'm just trying to cut to the chase. What is the employer trying to do? He's trying to prevent the employee from taking his employees with him. I try to make that clear in my non-solicitation provisions that not only you can't solicit, but you can't hire or you can't help someone else hire them away from you.
Are there any other provisions that you might include to prevent companies from being in the same position as what happened in the EuroCAD case?
Yes. In addition to beefing up the non-solicitation provisions that we just discussed, I also include a provision where the employee agrees not to compete or begin competing while still employed at the company. If EuroCAD had the employees enter into such a provision, that may have helped them out.
Thanks, Chip, for walking us through the Eurocat decision and showing us ways to get around that decision, as well as business solutions for companies that want to enforce non-solicitation provisions with their employees. Chip, if companies had questions about this issue, non-solicitations, maybe even the Eurocat decision, how could they get hold of you?
Yeah, if anyone has any questions or comments, they can email me at bmorris@krcl.com.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Energy Law Roundup. If you would like additional information about anything from today's episode, you can contact Tom at 210-446-6999 or by email at tom@charlone.net. New episodes of this podcast are available every week on the web at www.energylawroundup.com, your one-stop source for breaking news and developments in energy law.